You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. In your backyard. And worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
Hello, welcome please to Telstra Customer Service. How may I be helping you?
Conform or be consumed.
Today is a very important day in Australia's history.
I heard a rumour today.
I like your rumour.
I know, as a parent, I would often say to my children, you've just spoken to this person for 8 hours at school, how can you sit online and chat to them for another 5 hours?
What is your environmental policy?
To sell Telstra.
You heard of road rage?
Yes. What about web rage?
And within a few minutes.
Minutes. Yeah, minutes. It's not your next year, mate.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. It's no secret that Australians have a love affair with technology, and atop of the list of gadgets that we just can't do without is the mobile phone. An estimated 94% of Australians own a mobile phone, and for some, it's their most treasured gadget. The mobile phone boom has fascinated sociologists who for years have been warning of a potential of mobiles to change the way we interact. And now there's evidence that mobile phones have got thousands of Australians hooked. We've even taken it to the streets here at Tech Talk Radio and found that money spent on phones and phone plans is absolutely astounding. Clinical psychologists have reported that many young people would almost prefer an amputation to being without their mobile phone. So what's the world, or Australia in this case, coming to? Are we becoming a society where being connected or in touch with our friends is now the most important thing to us? And how does this telecommunications affect us socially? Those in the know say mobile phones reduce the amount of face-to-face contact people have, which leads to less meaningful relationships. With mobile phone usage costing some young people hundreds, if not thousands of dollars a month, one has to ask, where are they getting the money?
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
Microsoft takes a look at its future. Virgin takes to 3G. Acer calls Vista a dud. Apple iPhones hacked, or should that be cracked? And Network 10 snubs TiVo. All that and more on Australia's premier tech talk show, Tech Talk Radio. But first, let's find out what's been making news in the tech world this week.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Microsoft looks at its future, NextG feels funding pressure, Network 10 snubs TiVo, and Virgin joins the high-speed data race. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Australia's peak communications body, the Australian Communications and Media Authority, will take a fresh look at whether or not the country's television viewers are finally warming to digital TV. In 2006, studies found only 30% of viewers had adopted digital TV, up from 13% in 2005. And 14% of non-adopters were not even aware that digital free-to-air television existed at all. A massive 71% of non-adopters were not interested or not sure if they were interested in digital free-to-air TV last year, up from 61% in 2005. 2006 studies also showed that TV broadcasters and communications authorities were failing in their efforts to promote digital television. The Australian Communications and Media Authority has kicked off a new round of research into digital TV uptake, with the results expected to be released early next year. This comes ahead of the transition to digital-only broadcasting in 2012. Microsoft's chief executive, Steve Ballmer, has defended the software company's expansion beyond its Windows and Office system businessware, saying web services and consumer devices are key to the company's future. Speaking at an annual meeting with financial analysts, Ballmer acknowledged he had been hammered by investors who argued Microsoft should focus on its core desktop and server software business and forget businesses like digital music players and video games. He went on to say Microsoft aims to make software that integrates the best features of desktop software, high-end corporate software, web services, and devices, and it needs to be in all of those areas to keep up with the pace of innovation. The Microsoft CEO said he was more optimistic now than at any point in the company's history and saw more opportunities for growth in the next 10 years than in the past 30. Microsoft's expansion into new businesses has not always been smooth. The $1 billion charge the company took to fix problems with the Xbox 360 game console was a painful lesson about hardware design. Telstra will receive no money from the federal government's $1 billion communications fund for its next-G digital mobile network, unless it performs as well as the existing CDMA mobile phone network. The telco will also be forced to keep the regional arm of its CDMA network operating in tandem with the next-G network, despite an agreed shutdown of January 28 next year, if it fails to lift standards in the bush. The new conditions, which will be announced by Deputy Prime Minister Mark Vaile, escalates the war of words between the Coalition and Telstra, following months of brinkmanship. In a speech to be delivered in Queensland's National Conference in Brisbane, Mr. Vaile said he was future-proofing the telecommunications system. He wanted to emphasise that he will not be using money from the Communications Fund to bring Telstra's next-G network up to scratch. In a move to allay concerns about the quality of NextG, Telstra claimed last week that it was 2 months ahead of schedule and would be able to match coverage of the existing CDMA network by October this year. Network 10 Chief Executive Grant Blackley has poured cold water on suggestions that the 10 network will sign a deal involving Seven's media personal video recorder, TiVo. Seven announced in May it was launching an Australian version of the TiVo in early 2008. There's been speculation that the 9 and 10 networks could sign a deal involving equity arrangements with TiVo, and that talks have been underway involving both parties about cooperation. Mr. Blackley said TiVo was likely to be one of 20 or 30 providers in the PVR market, and that 10 did not necessarily want to exclusively associate with any one of them. Optus's Virgin Mobile is the latest carrier to take a tilt at the burgeoning mobile broadband market, becoming the first to combine voice and internet access in a single price package delivered over a 3G network. Virgin, a virtual operator using the Optus 3G network, announced two broadband plans, with one aimed at home users and the other at mobile users with laptops. Virgin is promising a deluge of advertising to support the launch, which it says will be the largest since the brand kicked off in Australia. But for once, the announcement will not be accompanied by a trademark media stunt by Sir Richard Branson. The new at-home package will include a home phone with unlimited free local and long-distance calls, free calls to Virgin Mobiles, wireless networking, and 4 gigabytes of internet access for just $60 a month. While it uses the mobile network to connect calls, the new service would have the appearance of a conventional home phone, with a fixed line number and the ability to use an existing phone. And that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Senator Coonan, here's the cynical side of me coming out.
And I've got some residual powers.
Residual powers? Sounds like something out of Harry Potter.
Maybe they are taking...
Senator Coonan, the voice of reason.
Oh,
I wouldn't be calling our listeners Wallies, but...
Hey, we didn't do it. This came as an email.
She stood on her phone or something and completely destroyed her old phone.
I must have been a Nokia.
It was, actually.
No, there you go. I rest my case. Are
people having a go at your diction now? Oh, my goodness.
He doesn't like me saying Australia. He wants me to say Australia.
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 Listen, Australia. The bargaining chip we have is you can't turn off CDMA until you get an equivalent or better coverage through NextG.
At the end of the day, the photography is all about the person's eye and what they see. You know, I used to spend hours in dark rooms, you know, doing prints and things, and there's no one doing it anymore.
I don't want to sound like a commercial for Three.
Dr. Rob's job.
They hate the lack of HDMI-dom and 1080p.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Another day here at Tech Talk Radio, and welcome to the show again. Hello, Dr. Ron. How are you this evening?
Very well, thank you, Andrew. It's another day, another dollar, isn't it, as they say?
Look,
the expression goes.
And technology's been very much not on my side of recent times, too. And I'll talk about that very shortly. But Mark Diggins joins us this evening. You're going to give us a bit of a chat on NextG and things like that.
That sort of stuff. Give you a bit of an update, and we'll talk about some of the things that were in the news tonight.
Oh, good. Yes, a bit of currency is where we're at the moment. We're going to be talking about mobile phones this evening because, believe it or not, we're obsessed with them. Dr. Ron, are you obsessed with yours?
I am obsessed with
mine. What happens when you don't take it with you?
It's funny, I don't mind turning it off. A lot of people have phobia these days, even about switching the thing off altogether. And if the thing's not turned on, they're totally out of contact, aren't they? But I don't mind turning it off. Turned off at night time, and... during the day, during the morning. I'll switch it on after I've
got it. I know when you turn it off, it can be very frustrating at times. Why does he turn his phone off? You're probably one of the only people I know who do, actually.
Well, this is just it. I mean, I don't mind friends and family calling me, but I do get calls for work, and I'm very much a person that values my private time when I have private time, and I'm one of maybe the few people, it sounds strange for a technological person, but I don't want to be 100% contactable 100% of the time.
Well, Mark installs the network, so what happens when you turn yours off? Do people panic?
No, of course not. No, I don't install it. I just test it after it's been installed.
Make sure that's right. I get my facts right. Yes.
I just had a mobile phone technology moment then. You know, like
did
a,
you?
Yeah, the device I use has got a 2-megapixel camera. So I took a photo of something that we don't talk about in the show tonight to send through to Andrew to put on the web page, possibly. Sorry, your photo is 339 kilobytes large.
Oh, would you
your
like
limit
to...
is 300 kilobytes large. Go on, hang on. This is the technology. This is the one you've sold me. This is the phone that, you know, you're selling for your network, and you can't even take a normal photo and send it. You know?
Yeah. Now, were you trying to send this across the phone network, Mark?
Yeah,
you're
trying to send it as an MMS.
Yeah, you're not trying to obviously send it as a Bluetooth message.
No,
or infrared.
Not beaming it.
Not beaming it, no.
Infrareding it, Bluetoothing it, or anything like that. No.
Why is the network limited?
Oh, I have no idea. You know, what's the problem?
Bandwidth. Bandwidth's the problem, always has been, always will be, says he, putting his mobile phone on silence.
The pipes, that's what it is.
Anyway, we're going to be talking about mobile phones tonight and our obsession to it and things like that, so stay with us. In the meanwhile, let's have a bit of a chat about some letters. The first one, Dr. Ron, is directed at you. What's up with the Mobi site? It's always a few weeks off. That's from Jeff Gates at jgates.jeff. Good question, Jeff, to which the answer is...
No, that was an interesting silence, wasn't it? I replied to Jeff about half an hour before I left to come up to do the program today. Look, just haven't got... I mean, 45 hours a day is just not enough. I haven't got enough time to do everything. I'm sorry, Jeff. I'll keep it more regularly updated. But if you haven't checked it out, ttr.mobi, it's a small-screen formatted website with... sometimes on 1 or 2 weeks delay, hopefully not more than that. Yeah.
All right. Another email in this evening from Eileen. Unfortunately, I have been unable to listen using the internet. Even my radio, Windows Media, cannot connect to Shoutcast Stream, won't connect either. Really wanted to listen to today as I know Leanne is on. Oh, really? Who's Leanne? No, she's not on now. Oh, there's a bit of a giveaway, isn't it? Hopefully we'll be able to provide a solution for future listening. Yes, the stream does work, but obviously someone's having problems out there with their Tech Talk Radio Shoutcast / Windows Media Stream. So
they're both running for this episode. If you want details of how to listen live over the internet with streaming, where do we go, Andrew? There's a link on the main Tech Talk Radio webpage.
Head to the website, techtalkradio.com.au, and on the left-hand side down it says Listen Live, 8 p.m. every Monday, and GMT, which means you can listen as the show originates. And failing that, you can listen to us on any of our partners around the countryside, from Cairns to Perth these days, and even further afield from that. So
you can. With the streams, I think there are two streams. One is a Windows stream, and the other one is a what we call a Shoutcast stream, which works with iTunes and things like that.
Real audio,
that's it.
Mark? Yes. So listen in live, everybody. Have a bit of a laugh and hear the mistakes we edit out in the podcast and the other show. So, all right. Very good. I have a grizzle about technology this week, which I thought I might air with you boys. Now,
what happened to the rundown tonight?
The rundown's in perfectly good order. Thank you for asking.
we have a short Excel spreadsheet that we print out just to give us a bit of a guide for what we're doing each episode. And Andrew,
it is. It reflects what we tease to
does.
Say this is what's on the show. Sometimes it makes no resemblance to what actually goes to air. But
I might tell them the real reason. It just tells us how over budget we're going and how late we're running.
And how over time we are every week. That's right. I got a funny urgent email from Andrew about an hour ago saying, please print three of these. This is a turn up for the books. Usually it's me that has the printer problems. What happened, Andrew?
We're doing some renovations at the McComb residence at this point in time. The children have been taking over the household over in recent times, and Mum and Dad are actually digging the heels in, and we're reclaiming some of our lost territory. And as a result, we're moving computers around.
Ah.
And one of the dilemmas is the printers, because they take up a lot of space. They're hideously looking things, and you just want to get them out of harm's way. So in our laundry of all places, we have a network hub, which Mark was laughing ferociously about when I said this before.
I can't believe you got a LAN connection in your laundry. I mean, you must be the only person, surely.
Well, when we built the place, we actually put ran Cat 5 into the laundry, and there's a gigabit switch in the laundry cupboard with some power in there.
I had to be running the dryer that day. Imagine the prints that are going to come out. They're going to be all streaked in.
I think it's a good idea. Adam Turner will be able to sell you a washing machine with an Ethernet connection in it.
Oh, I'm hanging out for my toaster with my Ethernet port. Yeah, actually, that's a good idea. Washing machine and clothes dryer.
Yeah, it's the way of the future.
Yeah, connect in, TCP IP in, and start the spin cycle.
Spin cycle now.
Yeah. But anyway, talking about print cycles.
Start the print cycle.
There are a couple of... see, we've got a laser printer and a bubble jet printer, one for black and white, one for colour. Now, we're going to stick them in the laundry cupboard, and there's a wireless router underneath there, but it didn't quite come together in the hour and a half that I had to eat dinner and print out the rundown and come up here. So that's the short... I did manage to get one out because I plugged the printer directly into the laptop.
Ah, good work, that man. Well done. So you do have a colour one after all.
Yes, so technology actually came to the aid there just by the hair of our chinny-chin-chin tonight, and that sums up my week beautifully. I've got a gripe here, which I have written about on my blog, and I also wrote about in the Green Guide. One of the biggest concerns I've got is the way that people leave you high and dry once they sell you a product technologically, and then they leave you holding the baby, so to speak, when time comes for a bit of support. Now, I wrote about it in the Green Guide last Thursday, which is the Melbourne's, how do you call it? It's an IT paper that comes out in the Melbourne Age.
Yeah, it's the television or the entertainment supplement, I guess, as part of one of the Melbourne's newspapers.
Yes. So I wrote about it in there about one of my gripes being how technology is being, as a consumer. Once you buy a product, you've got nothing to go to. This week, I experienced that firsthand thanks to the voiceover IP company called Engine.
Oh, I use them. I'm an Engine customer.
Yeah, well, I'm an Engine customer too, and I'm not having a go at the level of service. What they provide works, but when you need support, it's sadly lacking. I spent considerable amount of time, thank goodness I have a speakerphone, trying to connect through to their support department during the course of the week. 52 minutes, to be precise, before I got connected so that I could set my voicemail up on a service that I had.
Were you on hold for 52 minutes?
I was on hold for 52 minutes waiting to get to support. Now, having said that, I have another phone in the office too, so I thought, having written this thing in the Green Guide, I'm now going to put my...
While you're on hold, while
I'm
waiting.
On hold, yeah. So I picked up the other phone, I rang the same number, the 1-300 number that they have.
Right.
And this time, I went through to sales. The phone didn't even ring. And there was a guy on the phone saying, hi, how can I help you? A human person. Now,
did you say, put me through to a technician who's a human straight away?
I did
please.
Actually say that. Mm. And he said, oh, they're on the other side of the building. And I said, well, that's not my problem. Mm. But anyway, I sort of unceremoniously vented my frustration with the poor guy. He was most sympathetic and apathetic to an extent as well. And
sympathetically apathetic.
But this is the case. I decided I was going to write on my blog, which is McBlog, and we're all going to talk blogs tonight too. But that was the biggest, singlest, most frustrating thing. And now, I'm not going to ring them back. I've got a problem with my voicemail. I just have to allocate 52 minutes of my day to see if I can get through to them again.
Now you compare them almost, don't you? Because you know, you've had Telstra experiences before, you haven't been happy with them. You've been to Internode, I think it was. We're very happy with them.
Oh, Internode's fantastic, yeah.
And now you've done Engine and not so happy with their response.
But let me just say that the Telstra side of things, you do get to speak to someone in a fairly quick call time. Telstra, maybe a couple of minutes after you've done 10 rounds with that goddamn IVR they've got. But after
you've got to work your way through that IVR, don't you?
There's got to be a short way of getting through to that. But once you get through the IVR, yes, you can actually speak to someone who, if they don't know the solution, they will pass you on to the next person and pass you on to the next person. It's a bit like playing a running relay, I guess, at the end of the day.
Nothing worse than being passed to the next person and then waiting in their queue. I don't do that too much in Telstra, but when you do, you go, hang on, I sat through the first queue, now I shouldn't have to sit through anymore.
I want an express queue, please. I want a human. So that was my dilemma with technology, and I've got to get my voicemail going, because guess what it's doing now? If you ring up, you hear me, and I sound like I'm on drugs, like I've got a cold tonight, you might be able to tell, but it sounds very slow motion.
Is all you want to do change your personal greeting,
yes.
Is it?
Yes, my personal greeting, it just says, g'day, this is me. But instead of sounding like me, it sounds like me on steroids.
Mm.
Drugs. I don't know. It takes about 10 seconds to what I would normally take 2 seconds to say.
Does it sound like you've been playing with the little effects module in my mixer?
Now, Yes, exactly. And anyway, I've got to... Do I have to? I have to ring them up and abuse... Well, not abuse them, but say, listen, guys...
But the instructions for doing something as simple as changing a personal greeting on a voicemail box should be on the website, surely.
Oh, yeah, it is. It is. And it's all there and it's all printed. Yep. And I can do it. But it sounds like your MP3 player. You know how your music plays?
So you want to, like, upload a file or something like that to make it...
No. I just want to record a message. I want to say, hi, it's Andrew here. I can't take your call. Leave a message. And it comes out, hi, Andrew.
Oh, so it's really... There's a technical issue with it. Are there something wrong with the recording?
Exactly.
Oh, right. Okay.
And I'm trying to... Yes.
I thought you meant like
that. Can you see the bruises here on my forehead?
Yeah, I was wondering where they come from.
They're not Telstra bruises, by the way.
They're engine bruises.
So that's been my dilemma with technology.
It sounds like my mobile phone when I play MP3s.
Yes, that's what I was trying to say to you.
This might be an endemic problem.
With MP3, maybe they're not using your software that you need. Disk to phone.
I've got to say, if you tuned into last week's episode, you'll know I was having some issues playing music files on my new Sony Ericsson W850i mobile phone. I'm pleased to say that over the last 2 weeks...
You've solved the problem.
Well, it seems to have solved the problem. I've kept it updated with using the disk-to-phone software rather than using the Windows Explorer to drag files into it.
Yeah.
And that seems to have fixed the problem.
Yep.
From 33 to 45?
Correct. Mm. Yes. Ramp up those RPMs.
RPMs, yeah.
So let's talk about blogs briefly. Dr. Ron, yours is at drron.com.
.au. That's it.
I've read yours. You've got some good pictures there at the moment of someone driving a tank through a mobile phone base station.
Thank you. I thought that was quite bizarre.
They're great pictures, and everyone should go and have a look at them.
Should share them with the world.
Adam has his, and you can follow the links off the Tech Talk Radio website because they're on there down the right-hand
Seeking
side somewhere.
Seeking Nirvana.
Lid has hers, and if you're wondering where Lid's been, she's on holidays in Mexico at the moment. She's not taking my calls.
Oh.
So we'll get back to her. Hopefully she'll be back in good old sunny California within the week or so. That's why she's been noticeable with her absence. Yes, Graham, you'll catch up with him on the forum. Mark, are you going to get a blog or something?
I sort of set one up and then don't have time to update it, so no, effectively.
Okay, and I've launched mine because I felt the urge to vent the other day. AndrewMcComb.com, you'll find it, which is another WordPress blog.
You're very fired up.
I was very passionate about it.
Yeah, very passionate.
And I think that's the thing with blogs. Blogs are opinion. They're not news. They're not anything else. They're
commentary, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly. So good place to go and vent, and feel free to go and have a read and put some comments there and all that sort of stuff. We prattle on. We should move on. iPhone has a bit of a shortfall, or falls short, as they say in the classics. AT&T are regretting the day that they signed up with Apple.
Oh.
And AT&T has wiped some of the glow off Apple's iPhone, releasing numbers that show fewer people than expected signed up for the service for the first 2 days of the multimedia phone's release. AT&T basically said it activated only 146,000 of these little suckers, as opposed to Apple's forecast of 500,000. So I think they might have been hedging their bets to sell 500,000, but AT&T could only manage to connect 146,000 of them. And that's probably also due to the fact that they had a few technical issues over there when they tried to launch the good old iPhone.
I guess that's an interesting one too, because we've talked about it before and also had some feedback on it, saying that why would you release a phone that's 2.5G? And I think Vodafone even came out in the press and said something similar. But maybe the people they're aiming it at are the Generation Y, who don't really care that much about that, unless they're the tech-savvy ones. They like the fancy look of it and the feel of it and the iPod sort of use of it and, you know, not so concerned by it sort of thing. But, you know, we've sort of given it the thumbs down to going, why would you release a phone like that? We wouldn't probably buy one. But it doesn't mean it won't sell well to a particular market.
I don't think it's a matter that we wouldn't buy one. I think it's just a matter that it's not compliant with our network over here. They have to bring out something that works, because there's a, I would imagine, the groundswell and the demand for a phone like that in the Australian market would be substantial.
Yeah, but I think it's only in that market where the people want that fancy looking phone, because I certainly wouldn't buy it.
I work with people like that.
Yeah, no.
Well, I went to a furniture shop today, actually, because we're moving offices very shortly, to check out the trendy new furniture, and nearly fell over backwards when I found out what the price was. Yeah. But they're the people that I think would be attracted to that phone. So
you also get people who are diehard Apple
fans. Yep.
And that's right, there's nothing wrong with that, and they will buy it simply because it's a new Apple device.
Yeah, no, I sort of agree with some of the feedback we got saying that, it, you know, you watch it sell well, and I sort of agree with that, but you know, from us who are technologically savvy, I guess, and look at it and say, well, lining it all up, there's other phones on the market that probably do us better.
Jeff Dudley just emailed us on the Tech Talk Radio on-air email thing, onair@techtalkradio.com.au. He's listening to us on the stream.
G'day, Jeff.
If you're listening to us on the stream, or you're not, you're listening to us on the radio, send us an email at onair@techtalkradio.com.au. We'd like to know people listening. If you want to ask questions, and feel free to partake.
What does Jeff say? Just hello?
Just hello, guys. Looking forward to the show.
Excellent.
So, now, next thing, Virgin. Virgin joins the high-speed race. Optus's Virgin Mobile is the latest carrier to take the tilt at the burgeoning mobile broadband market, becoming the first to combine voice and internet access in a single price package, delivering over 3G networks. Now, I don't know whether you've heard about this, and especially, no, everyone here is shaking their heads.
No, no, no.
Don't you guys read the
papers? I do. I have heard about this, and I'm shuffling papers. This has got Telstra a little bit concerned.
I think it's got a few people a bit concerned, actually.
Yeah.
But in essence, what's happening is Virgin, they are a virtual operator on Optus's 3G network. How good, bad or indifferent that is at the moment, I don't know. Suffice to say that I've been pestered by Optus at the moment, trying to get me to sign up to certain things. And the guy that rang me today did actually have a fairly good plan that they were trying to tout, which included, for something like $99, was line rental, which was about $18, and 25 gig of broadband, which didn't meter uploads, believe it or not.
Yeah.
Maybe they're listening to the world, but that was a business package, so...
They might be. This little router device that Virgin...
Yeah, this is the Virgin router that we're offering,
yeah? It looks like a great little package. It's like a little router, and you can pop a SIM card in it, and it's actually a 3G HSDPA modem, and has a standard analog telephone port, so you can plug a normal analog telephone handset into it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got an Ethernet port for your network and a Wi-Fi router as
mm-hmm.
well.
Mm-hmm.
And you put the SIM card in it, it connects to the 3G network, provides you with all of your internet connectivity, voice over IP telephone calls. What a great idea. It's, it says here that for a $60 monthly fee, you get unlimited calls to landlines nationally and unlimited free calls to Virgin Mobiles.
So it's a bit like what Orange did when they first came out with their like their local area, I think. Isn't it how you used to get a mobile and have a local number or something?
Yeah, there's a few things. Yeah. Like that, there's one that I've seen in Telstra, which I don't think is being sold yet, but it's basically that sort of device. It is a HSDPA modem, effectively, which then has a Wi-Fi, so you can actually Wi-Fi into it, and then it's HSDPA over the air to get your broadband connection.
From your Wi-Fi devices,
yep. You can plug in a LAN connection to it, you can plug in a phone to it, normal phone to it, so it's a very similar device, by the sounds of it.
It sounds like a similar sort of thing. The great thing about this is that as part of the $60 fee, you get 4 gigabytes of broadband internet at average speeds of 512K with an upper limit of 700K.
Well, not bad at all, really.
Not bad.
When you think about it,
not bad at all.
Good if you're on the move, although I don't know how that's going to work with their home sort of fixed number types of thing. But nonetheless,
you do get a local number as well, so you can have people call into it with a local telephone number.
It just goes to show how this Next G, 3G, what's 3X series, all that sort of stuff that the manufacturers or the telcos are providing. The competition is working in the consumer's favour, which hopefully will happen in the fixed line environment fairly shortly. But tonight we're talking mobiles. Now, mobile broadband obsession is becoming a bit of a concern, where a lot of kids these days are actually running up some huge bills, which we'll hear later on. Because, Dr. Ron, you and I took it to the streets a while back, and we heard some of these kids and what they were getting up to. And it is the way that the market is going at the moment. There are kids out there that are actually spending, I don't know, more money than they're earning, I would have thought. They're obviously being funded by their parents and the likes.
Yeah, rich mums and dads paying
their
phone bill.
To keep their phone habits up and things like that.
Mm.
So I must admit, from business use, like you're on a $99 plan and I'm on a $69 plan and all that. Now, that suffices for my likings, but there's a lot more out there that people are using, that these kids are using.
Yeah, we're not on the highest ones by any stretch of the imagination, are we?
Mark's on a free plan, I bet.
No.
You have to pay.
No,
oh, my goodness.
That's right. Changing companies have to pay. Now I'm on a $39 plan.
Have you come across any, you know, friends, associates, colleagues who have told stories about obsession with their phones, anyone they know about?
No, I guess in my industry, everyone just uses it. It's a work tool sort of thing, so they don't have time. I mean, you know, the hours the guys put in at work, they don't want to be near their phone when they go home sort of thing, you know.
It's the last thing they want to do is talk on a telephone.
Yeah, yeah. Sort of thing, yeah. So they've been testing with it or talking on it. So.
Oh, mm. Exactly. Shari Walsh is a clinical psychologist, I believe, and her concerns are quite valid. This is what she had to say.
It all depends on whether or not they have negative outcomes. So whether they have a distress when they're unable to use their phone, whether there are times that they should be doing something else like driving, for instance, but have such a strong compulsion to use their phone that they'll actually use the phone while driving, even though they know they shouldn't. The question is really whether young people particularly are addicted to being connected to other people all the time. So do they need this constant sense of connection with other people, or are they actually addicted to a mobile phone? At the moment, I don't think we know the answer to that. The difficulty is that if people are addicted to the phone or to being connected and they can't turn it off, they're not able to give themselves the quiet time that we all need, and that's to me when it would become a problem.
Quiet time. It is a very important thing in today's life, because, I know, as you said, Dr. Ron, you can turn yours off. There's people out there that can't. I know kids that actually take their phones to bed at night.
Yeah, that's a bit sad, isn't it?
And this is where I think the cyberbullying and things like that all sort of creep into being, because there's a little bit of peer group pressure out there with the kids to take their phones home and be contactable round the clock.
Yeah, that's right. It's interesting at the moment, because one of the last places on Earth, I guess, in the business world, where you can actually sit quietly for a few hours and not have a mobile phone beep or ring or be disturbed, is on an aeroplane. This is the thing. We've reported recently that they're trialling what they call microcells in aircraft, commercial aircraft, so you can actually receive text messages while you're flying in a plane. And I think that
we're going to talk about SMS in a minute. You had something you're going to talk about later on the show.
We will be talking about SMS specifically, yeah. But this is like the sort of thing that Shari Walsh is hinting at. It's people who just can't let go. Look, you're flying from Melbourne to Sydney. It's only an hour. Just take a chill pill. Don't stress. You know, turn your phone off and enjoy the peace and quiet.
Yeah, there were some certain rules for those picocells, wasn't there, about where they could be used. It had to be above 5,000 feet. Did it have to be outside of Australia as well? Or can't remember with that one, whether you could do it internally or not. It was only on international flights?
Yeah, you would have to have roaming enabled, because I think it used
it was international
part of the network internationally. Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, Andrew Fuller is another person who knows things about that. He deals with talking to kids, I guess, and trying to help them overcome their problems.
Many of the young people that I work with would almost prefer an amputation to being without their mobile phone. It's remarkable. The second way that mobile phone usage alters sleep pattern is that actually it lessens the time between falling asleep and the onset of the first dream. And we're not quite sure really exactly what that means, except to say that we only see that pattern of sleep in one other population, and that's depressed inpatients. We see a lessening in sympathy, in trust, in empathy, the things that basically bind together, if you like, a civilized society.
So, we're a bit depressed. Maybe that's the solution to it. And I didn't know it sort of affected sleep. Do you sleep well at night?
Yeah, it depends.
Depends on that phone call you've had before you go to bed, really, doesn't it?
I do find with my sleep patterns, if I go to sleep knowing that the alarm isn't set and I don't have to be waking up at 10 to 6 or 7:30, and there's a lot less stress for me, I guess. I have a much better sleep if I'm not worried about missing an alarm clock going off. But probably the mobile phone is usually switched off, I think, when I'm sleeping, yeah.
Well, just to add insult to the injury, mobile email is heading for the masses too. Australian IT reported this week. Mobile email is set to come to the people in a big way, with research group Gartner predicting that 20% of all email accounts will be wirelessly accessible by the end of the decade. Now, I complete guilty to this. Everything that I have at the moment comes through to my mobile device, so that if I'm out in the field, that's the joys of being a, you know, sole business operator or a director of a company. You want to be able to deal with things as they come through, especially like when you're involved in media and things that cost money. You want to be able to deal with them straight up. So I do it, and obviously, you know, a lot of other people are going to do it fairly shortly too. You look at Three, you can eBay on your mobile, for goodness sakes.
You can. They've got that service set up. I've got a similar email service set up so that if you send me a message and mark it as a high importance or high priority message, it will get forwarded through to my phone as an SMS.
And I use that facility quite a bit.
You do, as you did tonight. So for people in the know, it works well, but I don't get bombarded.
Mark, do you use email on your mobile?
Yeah, I've got three accounts set up on it, but I don't do it that it gets sent to me. I make it so that I have to log in, so it's when I choose to. It also really saps the battery power if you have it so that it's constantly polling to see if there's new messages.
Yeah, yep.
So I just have it when I want to get them, sort of thing. So it's usually when I'm away with work or something like that.
We took it to the streets a few months back, didn't we, Dr. Ron? And we asked a lot of students, Generation Y's, I think you called them, about their habits with mobile phones.
Taking it to the streets on Tech Talk Radio.
Dr. Ron and Andrew McCollum taking it to the streets for Tech Talk Radio. We're asking Generation Y the big question, prepaid or postpaid? Also, how much are you spending on your mobile phone every month? And what's the one gadget in the world you couldn't possibly live without?
What sort of a plan are you on, mate?
Just prepaid.
What sort of plan are you on at the moment?
Yeah, it's prepaid. It's cheap. The plan, I went through Optus and Telstra and stuff like that, and I compared the plans, their prices, and yeah, Telstra's cheaper.
I just think it'd be better off if I had a plan and some sort of control over it. A cat, yeah.
Not an account because my parents pay it. Prepaid.
Goes through about $30 a week.
I'm not really sure. I don't really care. Yeah.
It's on a $29 cap. So I get up to $120 worth of calls, I think. Includes text and anything else as well.
I recharge, like, every 6 months. I recharge, like, $30 because I'm so poor, but...
Well, it depends whether you've got a girlfriend or not and stuff like that, so...
One gadget that you couldn't live without.
Yeah, I've got my iPhone that I always use and always has to be with me.
Can you live without your mobile phone?
I can live without my mobile phone, but it would be very frustrating because we're now used to being able to call people if we're running late or change plans kind of while you're moving, which is, not what we used to be able to do. So
can you live without your mobile phone, or is it one of those things you've got to have in your bag wherever you go?
Nah, I could live without it.
You could?
Yeah, definitely.
And if there's one gadget that you couldn't live without, what would it be?
Definitely phone. Yeah. Yep.
An iPod shuffle.
Yeah, probably a phone.
It's like a necessity.
So if it isn't an iPod shuffle, it's a phone. That's what it's really hankering down to these days, isn't it, Dr. Ron?
A couple of people mentioned the iPods there, but mainly it was the mobile phone, wasn't it?
Portable music players seem to be fairly big in the gadget side of things there, and that's all being embroiled into a mobile phone these days, so you get it all as one.
We get the new little gadget like I've got, the little Sony Ericsson, and it's a mobile phone Walkman device. It's just the one thing that I carry, and it does the lot.
And it now plays the music at the correct speed, which
it
has got to be good.
Yes.
All right, now, I interrupted you before when we went to that. SMSs, the days are numbered. What's this about, Dr. Ron?
Yeah, this is a strange article in the mainstream media this week.
Because I can only see SMS getting stronger, because it's a... You know, what they call it, a call forward technology, is it, Mark? Is that what they call it?
A forward and...
Store and forward. Store and forward, that's what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Yeah, the article was in The Age. It said the days of SMS are numbered now that mobile email access is becoming a commodity.
Ah.
This is according to research firm Gartner.
This is what we were talking about just now.
It is. Long the preserve of businessmen in power suits, mobile email is about to hit the masses, with one in five email users accessing their accounts wirelessly by 2010, according to Gartner. Now, I don't know that the days of SMS are numbered. I can see possibly where Gartner are coming from in that, in terms of the amount of data, 160 characters, you pay a lot of money.
You do.
Per kilobyte, it's a lot more expensive. Could be 10 times the amount, probably more now, actually,
right,
from last time.
There are good things about SMS, though. It means it's a short message, and that's what the S stands for, the beginning of S.
That's right, Andrew. The other thing is that once it's set up, and all you really have to do with your mobile phone is put in what's called a message center, so that when you actually send the message, the network knows where to forward it through, and that's all set up that's required. But I think that setting up email settings are a lot more complex, take a lot longer.
That's right, and not everyone wants, even though it's a lot cheaper, not everyone wants their email coming on their phone where they get everything sent to it, including 1 megabyte attachments where they'll actually have to pay for it, even though it's a lot cheaper overall per kilobyte.
Yeah.
They don't want everything coming to their phone, and they may not have, like me, they might not check their emails regularly, they might not have it set to download automatically, sort of thing. So eventually it'll head that way, but at the moment the SMS has got the it's always on type of thing. If the phone's on, you can always get your SMS through, sort of thing.
What ever happened to pagers? Remember those things that used to,
they're
the doctors
still around.
Used to wear?
I saw one the other day.
Do people still use them? Like, I would have thought SMS would have really gazumped paging and all
that. Yeah, it has. It pretty much has. It's almost killed it off. But there is some areas that still have SMSs. You sort of wonder why, but I guess we don't live in areas where there's no mobile phone coverage, so we get used to it. But there's
well, 96% of Australians have got mobile phone coverage.
That's right.
Apparently.
It's hard to think where there'd be a spot where you have no mobile phone coverage, but you would have pager coverage these days, isn't it? You know, it's sort of like that. But
it's bizarre. And if you remember back to the good old days when the mobile phone networks were being rolled out, certain things that we take for granted now, like an SMS across network, we can SMS any carrier. Remember when they first started off, and if you were Telstra, you couldn't SMS Optus, and if you couldn't do Vodafone? Like, was there any reason for that? Was it technologically, or was it politically derived blockings?
There was a technical... technical thing at the time.
Was it?
That it was easy to get over, but I don't know who actually started the ball rolling about let's go and investigate and get this interaction happening. You know, it wasn't as though it wasn't possible, it's just they hadn't implemented it and gone through about how they were going to do it. So someone must have started the ball rolling saying, there's more money to be made if we can SMS everyone rather than just Telstra people.
It's a bit like banks fees, you know, interbank charges, the ones that we never know about.
Yeah, that's
obviously
right.
Someone's making a cut on the inside. So, all right, next G, not so good for the bush, Dr. Ron.
Next G, not so good for the bush. This was a report by IT Wire this week. Telstra has introduced the first Nokia phone for use on its Next G network and is hoping it will entice Nokia loyal CDMA customers onto the new network, but admits that the new Nokia is not the best handset for rural users in marginal coverage areas.
Did it have a blue tick? Because this is where Telstra have...
Tell us about the blue tick. I don't know about this.
Okay. I was on radio during the course of the week on ABC Radio. We were talking to people who live north of Adelaide, and one of their concerns was the fact that it never... The CDMA network was great. It worked. You could make a call and it would connect and everything was fine. But everyone seems to be having a problem with this connectivity issue at the moment, and it seems to be coming down to handset-related issues. As Mark's probably a testament to, the network is pretty well there, but the problem is it's the handsets. Like what I was talking about on the radio was the fact that if you drive down the street and you put your hand on your car radio antenna, like say, for example, you've left it down because you've been in the car wash or something, you go and put your hand on it to pull it up out of the roof, and you can't hear anything for that particular point in time where you've got your hand on it. Now, you're doing the same thing to your mobile phone in a lot of respects. So the reception on these handhelds, which don't have external antennas, is being attenuated by your hand. What do you reckon about that?
Yeah, no, that's right. And we've talked about, I think last time I was on, we talked about the LG phone, which is one of the ones they released with. The antenna that's built into the phone is in the part that you hold. So it's a flip phone, but it's not the flip part that has the antenna on it, which is next to your ear and then can transmit out. It's actually the bit that you would normally hang on to down the bottom. And that's actually attenuating the signals. Now, I've just been out to Outback Queensland doing some testing, comparing like-for-like CDMA with wideband, and I can tell you that that particular phone, when you plugged an external antenna, which Telstra are now selling in their network, there's a little push-on antenna you can get for it. When you use that, it was equal to or better than any CDMA phone that we tested. Now, that's the difference between putting your hand and covering over the antenna that's inbuilt to it to putting plugging in a patch antenna that's just a little thing that sticks above. And sure, it doesn't look that good, but if it's the difference between getting coverage, it's making a big difference. Now, Telstra are actually getting a phone built by one of their manufacturers, I think it's nicknamed at the moment, I don't know what it's going to be called when it's released, but it's nicknamed the Grazier internally, so I don't know if that's the release name or not, that's going to come out, which is going to have an antenna similar to the old CDMA phones. One, either it'll be a little stub antenna above it or a pull-out antenna, I haven't seen it yet, but, you know, to address this problem.
Mark, the new Nokia, the 6120 Classic, the news article says, is not up to snuff in this regard. Telstra told IT Wire, the Nokia is a great phone and sure to prove popular, but in testing fell short of getting the tick for being recommended for rural handheld use. So that's what that means. There you go, I've learned something tonight.
So look for your blue tick if you're in rural areas
of
Queensland.
If it's important to you,
I was also out bush last Friday, actually, doing some country testing again in Victoria. And we were outside a Retrovision store, and they had just a little sign up saying that they had limited stocks of the new Nokia.
Mm-hmm.
They were selling like hotcakes. Now, Nokia had a few years ago, I'm not sure what it is now, had the biggest slice of the mobile phone market in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
More people had Nokia phones than anyone else. So people have been waiting for this Nokia to come out on the next G, and they're being snapped up like you wouldn't believe. So there is a big call for Nokia to have phones out there in all networks, and that's the thing. So let's hope they can bring out an antenna that gets a blue tick and keep everyone happy.
Nokia owners are a bit like Mac users, aren't they? Once you get a Nokia phone and you're happy with it, you stay with Nokia forever.
Once you've got that menu structure down pat and
That's what it is. It's the menu structure.
Yeah, it's very different to some of the others.
Yeah.
I never get it, but I've never. I only had Nokia once and just didn't get it.
Yes, I echo those sentiments. I had Nokia once and didn't want to get it. I think it got wet, I think. Anyway, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron, Mark Diggins at the panel this evening. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, apparently Acer reckons that Vista is a dud.
Oh, Acer, the laptop.
More controversial,
yes. They're the laptop people.
In the meanwhile, Adam Turner has a view from the couch this week about Telstra, Trojans, and his friend Margaret.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch on Tech Talk Radio. Spyware infections are not just something that happened to other people. Just ask my friend Margaret. Margaret rang me on Friday morning for help after her download meter went through the roof. She's on one of Telstra Big Pond's disgraceful 200 megabyte per month plans, with Big Pond counting her uploads and charging her an obscene $150 for every extra gigabyte she uses. She's also capped to a slow 256 kilobit per second download speed. Unfortunately, she didn't ask me for advice first, or I would have said to go with anyone but Telstra, except perhaps for Dodo, which offers similarly outrageous plans. The best place to shop around for good plans is Broadband Choice, which you can find at whirlpool.net.au. Anyway, Margaret is a grandmother who just uses the internet for occasional web surfing and email, so with a bit of care, she usually manages to stay under her measly 200 meg limit. What's really disgraceful is that the Telstra shop sold her this plan, telling her it was suitable for Skype video conferencing with their grandchildren overseas, when it clearly isn't. To make it easier for Margaret to keep track of her downloads, I installed a piece of software called Usage Agent, a small application that sits in the corner of your desktop so you can always tell what percentage of your monthly limit you've used. You can find it online at usageagent.sourceforge.net. It works with most of Australia's large internet service providers. Telstra sends you an email when you're approaching your monthly limit, and you can log on to the Big Pond website to see how much you've used. Even so, Telstra makes a lot of money from people who accidentally go over their monthly limit. Telstra regularly changes the way you log into the Big Pond website to check your usage, altering it just enough so that the Usage Agent software stops working. Thankfully, the developers of Usage Agent are quick to respond with a new version every time Telstra does this. Like I said, Margaret rang me on Friday morning because her downloads had skyrocketed. On Thursday alone, she'd gone through 150 megabytes, although she wasn't even doing anything, and it was still climbing. By the time I got to her house on Friday lunchtime, she'd already gone through another 200 megabytes, and she was well on the way to a hefty excess data bill. Margaret runs Norton Antivirus and Firewall, but it seemed that the spyware had managed to slip through and was now connecting to the internet. I ran Adaware, which is software designed to detect malicious applications that are hidden on your computer. While Adaware was running, Margaret told me she'd recently had a few strange warnings from the Norton firewall which she didn't understand, but she clicked OK anyway. Meanwhile, Adaware was compiling a list of warnings, so it was clear all was not well. It seems Margaret or her husband had been tricked into downloading spyware by a dodgy website. Norton had done the right thing and the firewall had warned her that spyware was trying to connect to the internet, but Margaret didn't understand the significance of the warning. It's still a worry that Norton's default response is to allow things through the firewall, so people who just click OK to everything aren't really protected. Spyware can be difficult to remove, but I helped Margaret buy her computer, and when I set it up, I prepared for such an event. When she first got it, I installed Norton's Save and Restore software, and every month Save and Restore takes a snapshot of what the operating system looks like and saves that on a second hard drive in her computer. Personally, I prefer Acronis TrueImage, but Norton Save and Restore is a good choice for novice users. Thanks to Save and Restore, I could just roll back her computer to how it looked in June. Now I didn't have to spend a lot of time trying to fix the problem. In 10 minutes, the computer was as good as new. When I checked Margaret's Big Pond usage meter, it turned out that almost all of her excess data usage was download. I would think that spyware would be uploading, not downloading. My theory is that we caught the spyware as it was downloading extra software or perhaps Acacia porn and was preparing to become a server. Very nasty stuff. There are several lessons to be learned here. Firstly, pay attention to those weird warnings you get from your antivirus or firewall. They're important. If you don't understand one, click deny rather than allow, and then get advice from someone you trust. Secondly, always keep a close eye on your download meter. Margaret's quick actions probably saved her from a $1,000 monthly bill. Staying safe online comes down to common sense and experience, but sometimes we have to develop these the hard way.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback. Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions. Call 1-300-664-882 and leave a voice message. That's 1-300-664-882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, and click on the feedback link.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Vista is a dud, according to Acer's boss, Gianfranco Lanci. Hey, how about that? I think I pronounced it sort of almost close.
I think that was an excellent attempt.
Yes, the head of the PC maker Acer, Gianfranco, has hit out at Microsoft's Windows Vista operating system, saying that the entire industry was disappointed by it.
Oh.
Funny, I don't know why they'd say that. The entire industry, apparently... according to the world's fourth biggest PC manufacturer, told the Financial Times in Deutschland that it didn't like Vista. So, I don't know.
I've got an old Acer Travelmate laptop, and I've got XP running on that, I think. It runs very well. Haven't tried Vista, though. Haven't tried Vista on anything.
Maybe I'm running a laptop with Vista. Yeah. I think it is actually an Acer machine, from recollection.
Is it going okay?
Yes, very well. There's some strange idiosyncrasies, though, with Vista that I don't like.
So the criticism is more general rather than it can't run specifically on particular models
of
Acer.
I think they're having a bit of a chat about the fact that they're fairly, they like a bit of grunt behind their processor, and just to get the full use out of Vista takes a bit of grunt, and Acer, maybe, I don't know, maybe they're just not keeping up, or it's just a bit hard, I don't know.
We've got a couple of new PCs at work, top-end performers for some mapping work we're doing, and they're both running Vista. Very good.
I think
it looks good, and it runs fast. It looks all right. I think anything other than a top-end computer, you might be struggling, but this went really well.
Look, I concur with that. But then again, it depends on what you're doing. If you're running something which is very demanding of a machine, the more grunt you've got, the more memory you've got in it, the better. The laptop that I've got, which sits, it really just does emails and word processing, and it does that very well as well. The thing that I don't like about it is its default lockdown state. I don't know whether you've noticed this or not, but if you're anything other than an administrator, every other, you get prompted for, oh, this program's trying to do this, and this program's trying to do that, allow, yes, no. It's as if Microsoft are a bit paranoid with Vista.
Okay, now these are PCs that have been bought for a specific task, and they're only being used for that at the moment, and they get hammered, but they only get used for this one task, and it's going very well.
Mm.
Now, one of the obvious differences between XP and moving up to Vista is the new Aeroglass interface, which is the nice transparent windowy interface.
I'm yet to see that.
Really? Are you?
It
was going to be the next question for you if you're running that on your Vista machine.
No, I don't think I've got the grunt to do that, but maybe Mark's. Do you see it?
Well, I haven't seen it as true Aeroglass, but when you close an application, it starts to shrink in size and disappears in transparency at the same time. But I haven't seen the actual Aeroglass effect that you're talking about, where you've got different applications on top of each other.
You've got a level of transparency in the window. Yeah, you need a truckload of processing power and RAM, I think, behind the machine to actually have that work.
And that will come in time as the manufacturers get their acts together and develop new things. That's one of the things with VistaFit, like Telstra and NextG. They built the network, and then we didn't have the handsets for it, but they're slowly starting to come out, and it's a bit future-proofish. So I think we're sort of seeing the same thing with Microsoft with their Vista. Now, speaking of operating systems, Apple's iPhone and Safari got hacked. Now, it's not that Macintoshes have ever been not able to be hacked, to use a double negative. It's the fact that no one's been bothered to hack a Mac because they're only 10% of the market. Now, you look at the iPhone, this is going to, as we discussed earlier, a lot of people would love to get their hands on one of these little things, which means that you, in the palm of your hand, you have a device which is running a fully-fledged operating system, not a cut-down or a CE version, as Microsoft would call it. This is running OS X. And as a result, the hackers have got their sensors out because there is a lot more capabilities now of actually getting into OS X through these wireless devices, otherwise known as iPhones.
So in other words, if you can sneak a virus in somehow, either via an email or some other method, then you can take control of the device.
Exactly. The security company who, I think it was Sophos, who actually, security evaluators, which test the client's computer's security by hacking into it, said that three employees found a way to take control of iPhones through the Wi-Fi link or by tricking users into going to a website. Now, tricking, that's the way PCs normally get infected, like what Margaret was with Adam's piece before.
Yeah.
Chances are tricked into going to a website, and then the website will then run malicious code on your device. Now, same thing here with these iPhones, or Safari for that matter. I don't think it's really dependent on the iPhone, just that the iPhone runs OS X and has a browser in it, so people have managed to find a way in there. Now, what they can do is they can steal information, connect into your phone and do other things, run software and code and spam through it, because after all, it's connected to the internet, and most likely make phone calls on their behalf if they have the wit and way to do so.
Interesting. My iMate PDA, which runs Windows Mobile, always prompts me to update the virus signatures when I do a cold boot. So if I take the battery off it, put the battery back on and reset it for whatever reason, I always get an antivirus signature update prompt. It's a good idea. So the same sorts of reasons, I guess, you could have a virus that was written for Windows Mobile could cause you no end of grief.
You've got me worried now because I don't think I run virus protection on my Windows Mobile device.
There you go. You better investigate that, Mark. Hit Google, search for antivirus Windows Mobile. And see what's available there for you.
Oh, scary. Viruses are interesting things. They're becoming quite, the people that write these things are becoming more and more, skullduggerous, for want of a better term. They try and find any which way to infect and turn your device into a zombie and send out to the masses because, spam's one of those things. Like, I just got some spam from some Arabic country. I couldn't read it. It was lovely pictures, though, but nonetheless. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, Dr. Ron, Mark Diggins, and Andrew McComb.
Talk Radio.
Subscribing to the Tech Talk Radio podcast is so easy. It's child's play.
Podcasting's so easy, even my little brother can do it.
Step one, visit the iTunes Music Store and search for Tech Talk Radio in the podcast section. Step two, click subscribe and you're done. Now every week you'll be able to listen to Tech Talk Radio whenever, wherever and however you like. You could be mowing the lawn, on a train, in a car, on a plane, at work.
Poor Charlie. Charlie.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb, Dr. Ron, and Mark Diggins in the studio. Dr. Ron, your quiz for the night. What country do we live in?
Australia.
Sorry, that was left over from last week's email from someone saying that you can't... Have you been practicing this week?
I have been standing in front of a mirror for 5 minutes every night before I go to bed. Australia.
Oh, very good. Well done, that man. So I can't remember who that was. I'll dig that out. Anyway. In the break, Mark, we were talking about new forms of cells. What did you call them? Femcells?
Femtocells. Mm.
Now, we've heard of picocells, we've heard of cells.
We've heard of fembots.
Have we?
Yeah. Yes, in Austin Powers Bank.
Correct. But this is altogether different.
Yeah, well, let's just go through them. We've got the macro cell, which is your normal base station.
We're talking mobile telephones for those of you quite anonymous again.
Macro cells there. Then you go down to the micro cell, which are the ones on the street corners, go about, a couple of hundred metres in the city, sort of thing, a bit further out in the suburbs. Then you go from the microcell to the picocell, which is what we were talking about earlier, the ones in the plane, for example, smaller than a microcell. And now we've got femtocells. Now, femtocells are a bit different to what we were talking about earlier tonight, where we were using we were using the wireless broadband part of that device there's one from Ericsson, but this one was...
The one that Virgin was offering.
Yeah, that's right. Yep. This is sort of the opposite. You actually connect up this box to your ADSL, for example, and it will provide you with mobile phone coverage in your house or your apartment or wherever it might be.
So it's its own little base station which connects to the telephone network via the broadband.
Yeah, now it's obviously not going to do everyone and that sort of thing. And then it's designed so that, the IP traffic going back over your ADSL connection goes through to your network, your mobile phone network, and then you get charged local rates for it and things like that.
Right. Fantastic.
Is it 3G or
2G? Yeah, no,
3G. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's just like you would use your normal Next G handset. If it was a Next G one, you would use your normal Next G handset for it.
So let me get this straight. Say if I live in somewhere rural Australia like Kilsyth, as
well, you don't even have
past,
to live in like something like that. But, you know, sometimes around the suburbs you might find an area that's not really
patchy.
Good. And outside it's fine, but inside you're not happy. You're just in that particular room of the house. It's no good.
It'd be really good for a car park down the bottom of a concrete bunker.
In car parks or in buildings where they've got three levels of underground dungeons where they do their business sort of thing. You can
Or an elevator shaft or somewhere like that.
Yeah.
So, you can use this. So what Telstra often do at the moment is put in a little radio repeater. So they take signal off air and, you know, where it's good outside and then repeat it inside.
Now, that's like a passive device, isn't it?
That's an amplifier, basically a bidirectional amplifier. It amplifies the signals from the phone back to the network and vice versa sort of thing. Whereas this one uses the backbone of your ADSL connection to do it, and then they charge your local rates because you're just using it locally in there. So,
isn't that great?
So that's been tested.
Fantastic idea.
Yeah, so
the mind
like
boggles. You can think about the evolution of this technology into the fact that obviously you don't want to run too much high power in the suburban areas, otherwise you're going to jam a few people.
Well, it goes back to what the old Orange network had when they, you know, if you were at home, you got free phone calls or cheap, untimed or something, wasn't it?
If you're using their cell, that cell.
When you were using that cell at that time.
Yeah.
So it's going back to that where when you're on your own femtocell, you'll get charged like local rates and that sort of thing. And then when you step out, you're using the same one. So it sort of like becomes a cordless phone in your house at normal rates. And then you go out and it's your mobile phone.
So a slightly technical question, just quickly. Is the switching done, say if I've got two mobile phones in the house and they're both connected to your femtocell, is the switching done locally at that device, or does if I was ringing from one handset to the other, or would the call go back into the network and then down to you again?
No, it would go back out to the network.
Yeah.
Yeah, all the way into the mobile telephone exchange and then back out to you again.
And you know how on your handset it comes up and tells you what carrier you're using? Will it come up and say, Dr. Ron?
Dr. Ron, the Dr. Ron network.
I'm connected to the Dr. Ron network.
I don't know. I haven't seen them. I've read about them. I've seen a picture of them, but I haven't actually seen them in action, so I can't answer some of these technical questions.
What are they worth, Mark?
I don't know.
I can see. Well, they've got to be in the reach of consumers if this is what they're targeting them at.
Yeah.
The other thing, too, which, the farmers on the farm, they could put one of these up at the shearing shed, for example, if they wanted to run their wireless network back to their farmhouse or something like that. I don't know. And all their shearers can have mobile phone coverage up there.
Down their fencing wire.
The mind boggles, doesn't it? I love out-of-context promos.
That's what it's all about.
All right. Let's talk about SIM cards. The cops apparently are going to get tough on SIM cards. Police and security agencies are strong-arming mobile phone companies into enforcing tough identity checks for people buying prepaid SIM cards. Now, this is what you were talking about last week, Dr. Ron.
Yep.
The Australian Mobile Telecommunications Association, otherwise known as AMTA to their friends, is preparing a standard method for retailers to capture names, addresses and other data at the point of sale. Retailers will also be required to check customers' ID documents, because at the moment, they can just rock up to your local greengrocers, your milk bar, Safeways, Coles. They're sitting there, $2. You buy a little SIM, off you go, you log into your provider's web page, key in your details, which may be yours or maybe somebody else's, and off you go. There's no other credit checks about that, is there?
No, I haven't used prepaid before, but someone I was asking about the other day said that you have to put in your driver's license number or something to identify yourself. And I was thinking, I wonder what that's for, because you're buying prepaid. Why, you've paid the money already, who cares, sort of thing.
I've got to tell you, that's got to be a bit of a token effort on the part of the carrier as well, because they're not going to have any form of access to the VicRoad system or the local licensing system. As Andrew said, there's no accountability at all at the moment. You can buy your SIM card with your bread and milk, you put it in your phone, go to the provider's webpage, type in a name, Dr. Ron. It doesn't matter if you've got a phony address.
You don't have to even put your credit card on the website.
You pay for it already at
the supermarket.
And you just top it up when you want to. So it's good they're getting more accountable.
Well, it's got to be good, because then it leaves an audit trail, I guess, for authorities. If your SIM card falls into the wrong hands and ends up in an airport in the UK, you can be traced back, really, can't you?
Yeah, it's a bit of a shame it's come to this, because you shouldn't have to have identification to make a phone call. I mean, do you know what I mean?
Well,
I can understand from
a
bank account.
How does
a
public phone work?
Yeah, exactly. I'm just thinking from when you got a bank account, you need 100 points to check. That's fair enough, because the taxman wants to get his cut of your interest, you know, so he's making sure that you've got the right person. But this is a phone call, for crying out loud, you know. Like, you don't have to do it if you go into a business and pick up someone else's free phone, you know, their
overboard
courtesy phone. And yeah, I think so. I can see what they're doing, but I don't like it.
feedback@techtalkradio.com.au or the forum at TechTalk Radio, forum.techtalkradio.com.au. We love hearing your thoughts and opinions on these things. Back with more in a moment.
You're listening to TechTalk Radio.
TechTalk Radio wants your feedback. Call the TechTalk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions. Call 1-300-664-882 and leave a voice message. That's 1-300-664-882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, and click on the feedback link. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ryan Mark Diggins, Andrew McComb here at the Coalface this evening, bringing you up to date on the latest and greatest technological gossip and things that are out there at the moment.
What a dirty coalface it is too sometimes.
It is. Hey,
in this world in which we work.
Linksys, you remember them?
Yes.
They're going. They'll be no longer very shortly.
Really? What's happened to Linksys?
Linksys will be phased out. It will become Cisco.
Oh.
Because it's their parent company. They make this, the domestic thing called Linksys, which is, they do wireless networking and ADSL modems and all those sort of things. So I just thought that'd be quite an interesting thing to discuss, but there you go. Linksys.
Cisco have been around for a long time. They had a very good name when it comes to networking components, routers, things like that.
Oh, yeah, and they still do. Cisco, very well. Big reputation. You probably use them in your line of work. Do you? No? You're purely...
They are used in the network, yes, yeah. But not in my area.
Yeah, good. Anyway, there you go. Second Life, the virtual online game, the MMOG, massively multiplayer online games, has banned betting. Amongst other things. They can do anything else, but you can't gamble in there.
That's right, yes.
Second Life has cracked down on the gambling in the wake of tightening rules regarding access to sex-themed locales in the popular virtual world. I don't know what that means. Second Life creator Linden Labs has banned betting games that rely on chance or random number generation to determine a winner or rely on the outcome of real-life organized sporting events. I think they're trying to draw a line between what's real and what's not quite so real, but betting.
The decision marks another major shift from Linden Labs' previous policy of non-intervention. It's supposed to be this place where it's the same as real life, and you can do whatever you like, but now they've clamped down on sex content, and now they're clamping down on gambling.
It's interesting.
So you need to get a firstlife.com, really.
Yeah, that's a very good... should be a website of the week. It's very funny. Go there and have a look at it. Have you been there?
I have. Get a firstlife.com. This is, yes, turning into not being a second life at all, is it? It's being a, yes, half-eyed, yes,
I wonder if
token second life.
Has Telstra's Island been resurrected successfully after it was vandalised and Second Life a while back?
What about the ABC? Didn't they get raised to the ground?
What did I say? Did I say Telstra?
Telstra.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. ABCs, they got trashed, poor things. All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Yes. And what have we got next coming up?
Poor Second Life. Yes, what's coming up?
We're going to talk about GPSs and Galileo after this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Have you heard something on Tech Talk Radio worth talking about? Are you looking to share your technical dilemmas or opinions with like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners? Well, now you can. Introducing the Tech Talk Radio web forum. Visit forum.techtalkradio.com.au and join our community. It's free and on a web browser near you. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
We all take GPS technology and these new things, Navmans and TomToms, and you'd be forgiven if you were under a rock for a while, wouldn't you? And you didn't know what a Navman or a TomTom was, would you?
Or a Garmin.
Or a Garmin,
the,
yeah.
The other popular manufacturer.
And they're in every other car. Like, I'm fortunate enough to drive in a four-wheel drive, and you can peek into other people's windows, and the number of people that have got these navigation systems in their cars are amazing these days. So, and they're coming very cheap, too.
Have you got one?
No. Well, I have, but I don't.
I have one on my PDA phone sort of thing, yes.
Yeah, we used it when we went to Mount Gambier recently. It was very good. Mm. She gets very frustrated when you don't take the roundabout.
And there's nothing wrong with the technology. It shows you where you are very well. If the map's behind them, though, that you've downloaded to your system aren't that good. And I've heard of this happening the other day where someone drove into a farmer's driveway and the farmer said to him, you've got a nav man, haven't you? And he goes, yeah. He goes, well, you're the fourth person this week who's driven into my driveway thinking there's a road going there.
Oh, so the maps that are supplied with it,
yes,
aren't entirely accurate. Now, when you went to Mount Gambier, you actually didn't use the embedded maps, did you? You used the output of the GPS receiver into a laptop.
No, in this case, just to get to and from Mount Gambier, we used the embedded maps.
Oh, righto, and they worked okay for you?
Yeah, that was fine. It was helping us, except for one spot where the road had changed. It was like we had to do a right and a left via the navman, if you like, or the tom-tom.
Is it Ranger was saying...
the road had changed and gone straight ahead.
That's Ranger was saying go straight ahead, but it was a T-intersection or something.
Yeah, something like that.
I also hear there's a bit of frustration with some emergency service drivers too, because they tend to go on jobs at speed and the GPS can't keep up with them. They should have turned right at the street that was behind them about, 100 or so metres back. So.
Yes, that's right.
We had Alan Ead from the Metropolitan Ambulance Service some time ago now talking about just that exact
I think that must
problem.
Have been who told me. So, yeah. The United States and the European Union have agreed on a common signal for use by their satellite navigation systems to provide more accurate images and information. The European Union hopes to deal with The European Union hopes the deal will help its yet-to-be-launched Galileo system, struggling to plug funding gaps, establishing itself in the global market for satellite-based navigation and other applications. There was a talk a while back that they were going to have a different form of technology, like the French, I think it was going to actually have their own form of GPS so that people wouldn't be reliant and dependent on the United States for their tracking information.
Now, I think Galileo was going to replace the GPS system. Is that right, or is it going to suck them in?
No, I hadn't heard that. They are different. Well, I think they were going to be different, and it wasn't going to be reliant on... Because the GPS system is run by the military, the US military.
That's right.
So they didn't want to be under that,
They wanted redundancy. They wanted to be able to have somebody else accountable apart from just from the US.
But it's not cheap to put them up, so now they've come up with some combined way of... Well, they're going to work on the same frequency so they can the GPS receivers can use both.
Very interesting how the GPS works. You must be able to see three satellites for a minimum for it to work accurately. And the more the merrier, really, isn't it? The way...
I think it's three satellites for a fix on the Earth and four satellites to get height information as well.
Yeah.
How many can you normally see if you walk out the front and you've got a pretty good view of the sky?
None.
None.
No. You need a GPS to actually receive them. You can't see them.
Oh, dear. Andrew.
No.
Yeah. It's the time of the show.
I've got a lot to learn. Yes.
Depends on your radio horizon, really, whether you're on top of a mountain, you can see right out, there's no trees and that sort of thing, but you could probably see 12 at once quite easily.
12, okay.
Yeah, if you're on a bit of a hill and you can get a nice clear view out to the horizon.
And how long is the average time to acquire all those satellite signals and start processing the information, or the time to...
The first fix.
Time to first fix, that's it?
That has improved dramatically from my first one to the most current one that I've got. I think it does it in 40 seconds now.
Yeah, the one I bought off eBay for $40 does about that too.
Yeah, that's
They're
right.
Excellent.
Whereas my first one used to take 20 minutes.
Mm.
If it's an absolutely cold start, it used to take 20 minutes.
About 10 times longer too to actually... just boot up. It took forever.
This is a problem they've had with the new Nokia phones, because I think you turn them on and they're
booting up.
Yes, because they start looking for satellites in the northern hemisphere, and it takes 20 minutes for them to realise, oh, I'm not in Holland or I'm not in Denmark. I'm actually somewhere
else
altogether.
You're in the southern hemisphere.
Yeah.
Mm. All right. We should do a show on GPSs. There's a lot to it, actually. Find an expert, bring them in. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron, Mark Diggins, and Andrew McComb back with the Oddspot gadget and that other thing we do at the end of the show after this.
Talk Radio.
Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback. Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions. Call 1-300-664-882 and leave a voice message. That's 1-300-664-882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, and click on the feedback link.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Cool! This thing is amazing!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Out of my own!
Recently, when I did my thing in the Green Guide, they asked me questions about my favourite gadget. Well, here's one which I think is going to replace the traditional favourite gadget, which I have. The Sony B100 is a new mini-disc type. Well, it's not a mini-disc. It's like an MP3/audio recorder. It's a small device which you can take with you, plug a microphone in, put your songs in, whatever you like. You can get it in a gig format or a 2-gig format. Now, this is new for Sony because Sony traditionally were, you know, kings of the Walkman. But they've moved away to this very small device, which is about the size of a USB stick. And it's got rid of this A-Track, this proprietary software that everyone...
Oh, thank goodness.
...has issues with and all that sort of stuff. So,
does it have a mic input?
Yes.
Oh, about time.
Yes, yes.
Good, good,
it does.
Good.
The B100 looks like the recently released NWEO10, if anyone knows what that looks like. I personally don't. Comes in 1 gig and 2 gig capacity, supports both MP3 and WMA formats.
Good.
Other features include an integrated FM tuner, a recorder, a voice recorder, a 6-mode equalizer, just in case you want to do things with that, and a battery life of 12 hours. That's cryptic for 12
about
hours.
12. Yeah.
Yes. Sonic Stage has been preloaded onto the B100, which is the software which comes with all these Sony devices,
yeah.
So you can move your music and buy stuff and
More
upload stuff.
Bizarre, unnecessary proprietary software, but
yeah, exactly.
Let's keep going on.
And the 1 gig and 2 gig models are available for retail. For guess how much? How much would you expect to pay for something like this?
I would say there'd be probably a couple of $100 of technology there.
$93, yes.
No, not bad.
Which is a damn good thing. So if you want to get into uni classes and record your lectures or do some grabs for Tech Talk Radio or just listen to some music on the train and you don't want to carry a mobile phone or something sizable around, this is for you. Not available in Australia yet, but I'm sure it will be very shortly. So watch this space.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
The Tech Talk Radio website of the week this week is in line with some that we've had recently, which is in stock photography. Dr. Ron, you do websites and blogs, and you need a photo from time to time.
You do. These are great, these sorts of websites. There was one that we used to use a lot, which was the SXC, the Stock Exchange site, to get stock pictures and stuff. But you found another really good
there
one.
There is another one. It's called iStockPhoto, w's.i, as in the I, capital I, some small I, whatever you want to call it, I for India.
For India.
Stockphoto.com. And you can download all these sorts. They're a bit more classier too than the Stock Exchange one, which is sxc.com.au.
Yep.
There is a trick. You do have to register, and one photo download will cost you about 1 credit, which is about $1. So,
Okay. So you do have to pay for them.
Yeah, these ones you pay, but they're royalty free, which means you don't have ongoing royalty rights for pictures and things like that, which you inherently get with published photos like Gettys and things like that. So
that's good. So you could use them for corporate publications or anything, really. Advertising.
That's right. And they have a good range of photography too. Lots and lots of photos there for you to choose from. And, well worth having a bit of a look. So there you go. The Tech Talk Radio website of the week, which is all the W's, iStockPhoto.com.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Shoot. Missed it by that much.
I know nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Oddspotters on Tech Talk Radio.
You ever been called a nerd, Andrew?
Been a lot worse, actually. But that's good. It's
many
nice.
A time.
Term Mark. Of endearment, isn't it?
Many a time, Mark says with a smile. It's a term of affection, isn't it? A US Navy technician who got mad when someone mocked him as a nerd over the internet climbed into his car and drove 2,100 kilometres from Virginia to Texas to teach the other guy a lesson. As he made his way towards Texas, Fire Controlman Second Class Petty Officer Russell Tavares posted photos online showing the welcome signs at several states' borders as if to prove to his internet friends that he meant business. When he finally arrived, Tavares burned the man's trailer down.
Oh, good.
This week he was sent...
Is this like web rage? We've spoken about this on the radio before.
This is web rage. This week he was sentenced to 7 years in prison after pleading no contest to arson and admitting he set the blaze.
Yeah, good.
All I did was call him a nerd and he came to kill me, said the man.
So just watch out who you're calling a nerd in future from now on.
Back off there, buddy.
Speaking of nerds, Jeff Gates from the United States, obviously listening to us online. G'day, Jeff. He's a bit of a gadget man too. He's probably been called a nerd in his time, like we all have.
Yeah.
Term of endearment. He said, I've taken my handheld, we're assuming that's a GPS handheld, on commercial airline flights to track the flight. It works wonderfully if I sit by the window, and it gives him speeds, altitude and location. And it also says in the email that he can double check if the pilots are telling Furbies when they come over the speaker and all that sort of stuff. So
that's what that abbreviation stands for, ASL. Is it altitude, speed and location?
Is that what it stands for, is it?
Maybe. Now, listen, we're also talking earlier about SecondLife.com.
Oh, yes, yes, briefly, we're running over.
The virtual world has a freely convertible currency with an exchange rate of about 270 lindens to the US dollar. Now, we're talking about gambling. On an average day, between 1.5 and 1.8 million US dollars changes hands.
How much?
Between 1.5 and 1.8 million. Million.
That's serious addiction for those people that like massively multiple online games.
An amazing amount of money, isn't it?
Oh, dear. All right, well, get a reallife.com, as they say in the classics. Until next week, from Mark, from Dr. Ron, and from my good self, it's bye for now, and we'll be catching up with Graham next week in the studio. So you've been listening to Tech Talk Radio around the country.
Tech Talk Radio is brought to you each and every week by a band of dedicated professionals from within the broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer and host Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Sir Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins. Our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Production facilities are courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night from 8 p.m. The producers wish to thank all the stations that are taking the show, including 3WBC, 3XX, Cairns FM and 4KZ. For syndication, sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit the website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.